Yes. And we are. Well, at least I invite you to organize with people in your community to build power and then continue that work, deepen your knowledge, political education. Yeah.
All right. Well, you just heard that from Ken Yoshikawa here on KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. This has been Wider Window Poetry. And as always, thank you for listening and stay safe.
The starfin eyelid sea monster peers out behind my folded lungs onto the dark. With slippy hands begins the climb from doubt to bold dexterity, but not a mark or clue presents the way. So sits to stare with beady quasars at the shadow's own prosperity, itself of gudgeon care to preen my jejune guttering and groan. What is this pale drudgery to wake into a coward world with parsec hope only to parasite the clock, forsake unknown adventure just to safely mope? But, dearest Gup, you are my favorite heart, my form your reef, the night your work of art.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Did you know that 80% of KBOO's funding comes from individual supporters? Show your support by donating KBOO on GiveGuide today at www.kboo.fm/give. And thanks for supporting volunteer-powered, community-focused radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Salem Progressive Film Series presentation of Holding the Thin Green Line. This documentary slideshow tells the stories of people fighting to save the souls of their communities and preserve the integrity of the Pacific Northwest as they fight to stop the world's largest methanol refinery from being built in Conemaugh, Washington, and a massive LNG facility in Tacoma. From December 6th to the 11th, the slideshow can be viewed at your own convenience at kboo.fm/greenline. Then on December 11th from 5 to 6 p.m., we'll hold a live Q&A session with activists who are featured in the documentary. Again, that's Holding the Thin Green Line documentary slideshow screening, December 6th to the 11th, and a live Zoom Q&A on December 11th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to another episode of Stories with Stella, and today I want to share with y'all a little bit of some of my insights and perspectives and different thoughts that I've been having for the last couple weeks. And one of the biggest ones among them is the amount of respect that people hold for certain jobs over others. For example, I applied to the dump recently, and I was very excited about the job opportunity. It had good pay and benefits. And it was very COVID conscious and not affected by pandemics and economic disasters. And I was honestly very excited for the job opportunity. And some of the response that I got from people that I was sharing that information with and my excitement about the job with was pretty negative. And I felt very judged and looked down on and was being kind of talked down to as if there was so much more out there available for me. Why would I settle for that? And I've heard a lot of the same thing over the years working in the service industry as a house cleaner and a housekeeper, as a barista, as a cook, as a server. All of those positions are ones that a lot of people really look down on of, oh, it's just minimum wage, anyone can do that job, there's nothing special about it, you really have to earn my tip. And it's something I'm really, really tired of and burnt out on, people judging industries that they really don't know anything about. And all of that really connects to sex work and stripping as well, because those are industries that are given a lot of judgment from our culture. And those of us who are in those industries or have been in those industries sometimes hesitate about how to share that information, because a lot of people will jump to assumptions, make rash judgments, and really change their perspective on how they see me or see other people in the industry. And I will say the times that people have looked down on me for working in the service industry, as much as that sucks, it's a different kind of judgment that people form when they hear the terms sex worker or stripper. But when it comes down to it, there's just really no excuse to judge anyone for the job that they're doing. I think there's kind of an outdated idea in our culture that people's identity has to be wrapped up with their career or their job. But most people I know, myself included, are usually working multiple jobs at once. So the idea of a career, I think, is an old idea. It's an archaic idea we can retire, because it used to be that people could graduate high school or college, find a job in an industry, and continue working in that industry for the entirety of their lives until they retired. But that's something that's not really a reality for many people. It is for some still, but for the majority of people I know, at least, most of us are going to have to jump from industry to industry or work multiple different jobs at the same time while we can get a foot ahead in another industry at the same time. And so I think the idea of wrapping up our identity with what we do for work can kind of be let go. The way that I see work is a means to an end. Work provides me the income and the money to pay for the food on my table, to pay for my bills, for my rent, for my dog, or my clothing, and for the fun things that I want to spend money on as well, and for the time that I'm not at work to be able to have money to spend on things that I enjoy. To me, that's what work is about. That's why I have a job. I don't think of myself as just the person who has worked as a cleaner, or just the person who has served food at people's tables, or just the person who has stripped at the club. Those are all different facets of mine that I've learned from different jobs, but none of those are my real identity. I am my own real identity. Those are all just parts of it. So I think a lot of times when people judge people based on their job, they're associating that person with that job that they have, which to me is just really ridiculous, because a lot of jobs can be temporary, part-time, whatever it is. What's the point of judging somebody on it? Unfortunately, a lot of people don't understand that, and they still do hold a lot of judgment. And so it's something that I certainly navigate in conversation a lot, and I'm sure others as well, because there's such a hierarchy with a lot of the jobs in this country. And I think that's kind of the way that it's set up to pit people against each other and all of that. But I hold just as much respect for the person who takes out my trash as I do for the person who's conducting my surgery or is teaching my class. And that's something that I hope can be a good thing that will spread, and more people will stop associating everyone with what they do for work, see people as the people who they are, and also just hold respect for all the jobs that people do that many others don't want to do. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't realize when they look down on a job. It's a job that they themselves don't want to do. So if anything, shouldn't they have more gratitude for the person providing that service? Those are just a few thoughts that I have on respecting different jobs and different industries. And I'm going to connect the next piece with respect for different jobs as well when we come back after this little music break. Baby.
You had a plenty of money, 1922. You let other women make a fool of you. Why don't you do right like some other men do? Get out of here and get me some money too. You're sitting down wondering what it's all about. You ain't got no money, they will put you out. Why don't you do right like some other men do? Get out of here and get me some money too. If you had prepared 20 years ago, you wouldn't be a wanderer now from door to door. Why don't you do right like some other men do? Get out of here and get me some money too. The men do. Get out of here and get me some money too. Why don't you do right like some other men do? Like some other men do.
Thank you. was too hard to wait. I know it's risky to follow this feeling, but my heart is eager and you make it wanna open.
My housemate Hazel here chat with me for a little bit, and this next something is a topic that I'm not super educated on, but what little information I have, I want to use this platform to talk about and share some information that some people who lack common sense don't have, which unfortunately there's a lot of you out there. So we're gonna dive in and kind of just talk about like visibility for people with disabilities. And the one thing that I want to ask you, since you've worked actually in the industry with people with disabilities, is there a better way to talk about people with disabilities, to say disabled people, people who are experiencing disabilities? What's your experience with that?
So at the nonprofit I got the pleasure of working for, part of my training was like a lot of POC language and just education around how the most minuscule words in your sentence make a really big impact on the person you're speaking to. This translates through many different topics, but in the world of disabilities, we were mostly taught to not refer to the person by their disability. However, with conversations that we were having previously, I learned more about people that identify with their disability.
So there's some people who might identify strongly with their disability and some people who don't identify with it at all. And so it might depend on the person to person kind of thing.
Exactly. So maybe somebody does feel really connected to that part of themselves and they want to educate you about their disability or how to address them, or just I guess how to talk about it in general, because it can be
it's almost like the easiest conversation
to initiate.
It almost seems like a pronouns conversation of what pronouns do you use, or in what way do I want you to refer to my disability, or do I want you to refer to my disability at all, kind of a thing.
Right. I feel like when you're dealing with any kind of really segmented genre of person, it's just best to ask questions and be upfront with the person.
Yes, and always over communicate and ask. I feel like that's always the most respectful way. Like, most people won't be offended if you ask what they prefer.
Exactly.
And something that I think a lot of people don't think about when it comes to people with disabilities is that they have a sex drive. I think a lot of people see somebody in a wheelchair and think, oh, they probably can't have sex, they probably don't want to have sex, and that is just super inaccurate. I've been really enjoying seeing some more representation. I think it's something that always could be increased more, but we've been fans of these TV shows in our house, Deaf U and Atypical, both of which are on Netflix.
I think so, yeah. Both are pretty new, came out in the last few years or so.
Yeah, I think these topics are something that people are becoming more and more comfortable exploring a little bit, which is great, and needs to happen more.
Yeah, I think they both did a really good job of using their platform to kind of communicate how different people experience different disabilities.
Yeah, because not all disabilities are the same.
And they kind of, like, educated you almost about how it's its own culture, like disability culture, and finding your place in it just like any other spot in society.
Yeah, it was interesting. In Deaf U, this show on Netflix takes place at Gallaudet College, which is the only all-deaf college in America, I think. And they were talking about in the show how there's kind of like different classes of deaf or ability to hear. I don't know how you would say that in the best way, but there's like elites, people who come from families, from parents that are deaf and from cultures that are deaf, people who are have minimal hearing or maybe rely on their voice more than their hands.
Yeah, something I took a few sign language classes in college, and sign language culture was like its whole subject, basically, like subculture of the language. And they talked a lot about how there's, yeah, the classes of being hard of hearing or fully deaf or born deaf or coming, like, hearing when they're born and then being deaf later in life. And all these different people are going to learn sign language or, like, inherit sign language, I guess, in different ways. And how that kind of puts you in a certain box to the rest of that group.
So there's even subgenres within the cultures themselves, which is something that's been really enlightening for me to learn more about. And I'm grateful that there are these platforms, and I want there to be more of, because I think a lot of people just kind of clump all disabilities in with each other and kind of think they're all the same and everyone is going to be treated the same. But not all disabilities present the same way. Just as, like, they're all different. Like, some are physical, some are mental, some are intestinal. I deal with IBS, and that's something that doesn't necessarily present as a disability. And so some people will say, well, you look healthy to me.
Invisible disabilities are, I feel like, its own genre. I know somebody who has endometriosis, which is virtually impossible to treat.
Yeah, it just
really
keeps coming
hard to
back.
Diagnose. Not a lot of research is even known or done on it, so.
And a lot of times people who experience endometriosis or IBS can look healthy and present healthy until they have a flare-up. And then life just can go to shit. So this doesn't make any sense to me, but I know that there are people out there who think that people within the disabled community aren't disabled enough or have to prove that they're disabled enough to use that terminology. And that's something I think is really goofy. But a lot of people even see people, if somebody's in a wheelchair and they can move their legs, if they're not paraplegic, people will say, well, do they even need a wheelchair? Are they even disabled? And that's something I think is really ridiculous and unfortunately common.
Well, going off that, I feel like it's important to also take into account people that feel like they're put in that box and, like, victimized and, like, judged are also people that can be in situations where that spirals a mental health issue. So they're now, yeah, they have their mental health to deal with on top of this physical disability, all because they didn't feel comfortable enough in their own identity or were somewhat, like, rejected by other people that they had previously identified with.
It's so hard how much separation there is out there. Something I like about a lot of the independent content creators is I've been seeing a lot more just representation of a lot more of variety of people and a lot more variety of disabilities.
Well, it's about damn time.
Yeah, it sure is. Because if somebody is disabled and is watching porn of somebody who is not disabled, it's hard to relate to that porn. But if you see porn of somebody experiencing something similar, then it's more relatable and therefore probably way sexier. One of my favorite Twitters I've been following is this gal named Go Ask Alex. And she's the first ostomy, a person with an ostomy bag, who won an XBiz award for her camming and her content. And
ooh, I'm intrigued.
She put out, she talks a lot about disability visibility, especially in the porn industry, for empowerment and for education purposes as well. And so she put out a really beautiful calendar curated of, I think it's 13 images of different people with disabilities feeling empowered in their bodies. And it's beautiful seeing that, and I want to support more of that coming out as well.
That's super cool. I'm glad there are people that are using their platform to just fight for what they fucking believe in. I think that's really cool. And being able to, like, turn something like a disability into something that really motivates you in life, and striving to, like, provide that education and use it for good. I think that's pretty brave.
Very brave. And to be able to make an income off of it and support yourself as well.
Yeah, it's also badass.
Hell yeah.
Good for her. You go, girl.
I think something else that kind of ties in with talking about disabilities that I also want to mention too is how much I want to normalize the topic of taking medication is okay. And it's not a taboo thing, because I think there's still a lot of stigma around anyone who's taking any kind of prescription medication and feeling ashamed or feeling like they have to hide it from people. And I've certainly experienced that. I grew up in a very hippie family that was very anti-Western medicine. And when I first started SSRIs, I was completely ashamed to tell them for a long time. And over the last few years, talking to other people and just normalizing those conversations for myself, it's become really clear how so many people are dealing with their mental or physical health in some sort of way. And none of that should be shamed. Because I think if anyone is doing anything to support themselves functioning better, that's actually really brave. And that inspires me a lot.
It's interesting how you bring that up and how it so closely relates to a lot of experiences I've had in my relationships with how SSRIs have affected my sex life.
Mm-hmm.
Not just with me, because I have had also experience on SSRIs, which completely fucks with your sex drive, by the way.
Completely.
And how it has affected my partners too, and how we had to have that communication of like, okay, yeah, this is great, but I'm fucking loaded off this Prozac right now, and I'm not gonna be able to come. Like, it's been great, but we should just
Don't need to keep trying for 4 hours. It's not gonna happen. And that's something that I've been like nervous of telling partners in the past about. And I've been trying to practice, like, bringing that up more because
it is stigmatized.
It is.
I don't know why.
I don't know where that came from, but people have this, oh, if you're taking a medication, you must be crazy, and crazy is bad. As opposed to, aren't we all a little bit crazy? And if we're trying to figure out how to make ourselves a little bit more sane, isn't that just a good thing? Shouldn't we just be proud of people doing that? Yes. Yes, we should. So I think that's our little piece on normalizing talks about disabilities and medications, and we're all enough just the way you are. So we're going to play some more music and then pop right back in.
Right now, and I'm hoping to lead you to victory, Kendrick. If I Woody decided he'd ask Anne for this first date. But just how should he ask her? And what if she refused? No, it won't be easy asking for that first date.
Say if you a bad bitch, put your hands up high. Hands up high, hands up high. Tell them that lights down right now. Put me in the mood. I'm talking about dark room perfume. Go, go.
I recognize your fragrance. Hold up, you ain't never gotta say shit. And I know your taste is a little bit high maintenance. Everybody else basic. You live life on an everyday basis with poetic justice. Poetic justice. If I told you that a flower bloomed in a dark room, would you trust it? I mean, I write poems in these songs dedicated to you when you're in the mood for empathy. It's blood in my pen. Better yet, with your friends and them. I really wanna know you all. I really wanna show you off. Fuck that, pour up plenty of champagne. Cold nights when you curse this name. You called up your girlfriends and your girl in that little bitty range. I heard that she wanna go and party. She wanna go and party. Nigga, don't approach her with that Atari. Nigga, that ain't good game, homie, sorry. They say conversation rule a nation. I can tell, but I could never write my wrongs unless I write it down for real. P.S.
While I was playing fair, baby, you played a cheat game. While I was playing fair, baby, you played a cheat game.
Baby, 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 baby
I want to talk a little bit about porn education versus harm and normalizing the exploration of our own bodies, because those things tie together a lot, and here's how my brain connects them. So porn, like many things in life, can be used for harm or for good, or for setting unrealistic expectations or providing an education platform. And a lot of mainstream porn sets very high standards for what bodies look like or what they should be able to do that cause a lot of comparisons among people, and I don't think that that is very healthy. On the other hand, I have learned a lot about how to explore my own body from watching porn and from watching what other people have done with exploring their genitals. I used to date this fellow who was very interested in exploring his prostate more, and he liked getting things put up his butt, and we were exploring all the different realms of that world when we came across some porn that was specifically on how to access your partner's prostate and make them feel really good through their butthole. And we would watch these videos together and then practice, and kind of same thing for teaching him how to perform oral for me. We'd watch videos of people performing oral on each other in very educational ways and showing how they flick their tongues or move their fingers, and then we would practice. And so in those examples, I found a lot of education from porn. And again, one of the things that I really like about kind of the alternative porn that's becoming more and more popular is there's just a lot more representation and a lot more focus on education. So I've been seeing, I have a couple of friends who make trans porn and have been finding a lot of people requiring different customs. And custom content is where you can ask the provider to make a video or a picture in a very specific way. And so you pay a little bit extra and you get this custom made video or custom made content. And a lot of people in the last 10 years have been hearing more and more about the trans community and don't really know how to educate themselves. And so a lot of the trans sex workers that I know have been receiving a lot of requests for things just to show all the different kinds of ways bodies can be and all the different ways to get them off too. Because there's so much variety. And I think something that's kind of silly that pops up a little bit in the alternative porn lifestyle is people kind of comparing prices with each other. Or comparing their cost of their OnlyFans, their Patreon, to which my only way of kind of looking at that is, in a world where you can Google butthole for free, let people charge whatever they want or whatever they need. So whether somebody is charging $3 or $30 a month for their content, they're still making a profit over customers who would otherwise be just getting it for free, and who appreciate supporting these people. So I'm not a big fan of people who judge other people's prices. That is something I will judge people for, because we all come into different industries for different reasons and with different needs, and that's nobody else's business. And so whatever you need to charge is perfectly acceptable. If you feel like you are making enough and you're being compensated, more power to you. Something that kind of also translates to the porn education a little bit that I was talking about is kind of this myth that all people with vaginas can orgasm from penetrative sex. And it really blows me away how many people, including people with vaginas, expect themselves or hold a standard to themselves to be able to orgasm from penetration. Something that I've learned is it's only like 40 to 50% of people with vaginas who actually can, and the rest need combinations of G-spot play, anal play, clitoral stimulation, all the different kinds of things like that. But a lot of mainstream porn just kind of, well, first of all, it's focusing pretty much all on the guy or the person with the penis getting off, and simulating the person with the vagina having an orgasm from zero clitoral stimulation and just getting their cervix pounded. And so that sets a lot of expectations that people who watch that kind of porn have for themselves. I myself used to really pride myself on how big of a dick I could take, when in fact I realized that stomachache I had afterwards was my cervix being bruised and telling me to stop, find somebody with a more appropriate sized penis for my vagina. But for years, I judged my own sexual prowess on how well I could take a vaginal beating. And I'm glad to say that after learning about that more and more, I no longer feel the need to be hurt in order to feel like I'm making my partner feel good. And so that's something where porn kind of set some interesting standards, but then also helped me realize that that's also not healthy, because a lot of people in the porn industry or in the sex worker industry are having these conversations more than people who are completely uncomfortable talking about sex. Something I didn't learn about from porn, but I learned about from physical therapy, and I'll get into that a little bit more, is how incredibly complex our pelvic floors are. And for those who don't know, this is new information for me. Everybody has a pelvic floor. For people with vaginas, you can access it easily through their vagina. For people with penises, it's easiest to access through the asshole. And the pelvic floor is essentially, it's our core chakra, it's the core of our body, it connects our legs to our abdomen, to our back, to our front. And so everything, all of the muscles in our body is kind of merge in our pelvic area. And because there's so many muscles and tendons kind of overlapping, we call that area the pelvic floor. And we do a lot of our lifting from that, our core workouts, a lot of just even standing and having good posture, all of that is going to come from having a strong pelvic floor. And because I used to push myself so much and have rougher sex than I enjoyed, I was experiencing some pelvic pain. And so my primary care physician gave me a referral to this office for pelvic floor physical therapy. Never heard of it before. And it was fantastic. I cannot stop telling people about it because it was so informative for me. And I went for the first time at age 22 and was completely blown away by how little I actually knew about what was going on in my vagina. And when I went in for my first appointment, the doctor was a woman maybe in her 30s or 40s, very friendly, used to having these kinds of conversations with people who'd never seen this kind of work before. And so I sat down on a bed with the stirrups and all of that, and she explained to me that she will be putting on a glove, using some lubricant, and putting her fingers inside of my vagina and pressing on the vaginal wall and the different muscles that are in there. And as she would target and press on specific areas, she'd have me breathe into very specific muscles. And I learned how to actively relax my vagina and all of the muscles in my pelvic floor, because it's not just one muscle. There's so many that are combining there. I had a severe pain in my glute that this doctor was able to release that tension through my vaginal wall because all those muscles were connecting and running through that area. And it was really interesting for me to know, and I didn't learn about that from my teachers or from sex ed or from porn or anything like that. So I encourage everyone to go learn about your pelvic floor, do some self-exploration of your own butthole, your own openings, get to know your body inside and out, because it's pretty amazing what our bodies are capable of and how much they do without our knowledge. It's really, really cool. So there's my nerding out on pelvic floor, porn education, exploring bodies. I'm a big fan of just getting everybody to just keep exploring your bodies. Don't be afraid of yourselves, because it's the only way we're going to get to know ourselves better or expect anybody else to know our bodies is if we know them. So there's my little spiel on body exploration, porn education, and getting to know the ins and outs, quite literally, of your physical being. Here are two songs that make me smile, and I hope make you smile as well.
Thank you.
from now on, I'm going to be ending these episodes with a short segment called Ask Stella. And the first question that I want to address and to close out this episode is a very common question. Is squirt really just pee? I really like this question because I myself am a squirter and have gone through kind of a rocky relationship with that. The first time that I ever did it, I had no idea what was happening. I was in college and I was hooking up with somebody and they were fingering me in just the right way, and all of a sudden I had this release that felt similar to coming, but there was a whole lot more liquid. And the partner that I was with thought that I had just pissed his bed. So he immediately got up, grabbed his sheets, and went to go do laundry and was kind of annoyed with me. And I felt a lot of shame and embarrassment and confusion because I didn't know what was happening. And it felt more pleasurable than just like peeing. So I was embarrassed and I didn't really tell anyone what had happened for a few years. I was also nervous that it was going to happen again. And so I used to kind of hold back while I would be masturbating just in case. But over the years, I talked with more people. I shared this experience. I heard other people's experience. I utilized the internet and realized that it's natural. And I've learned to let go of the shame around it and to just really embrace that aspect of my sexuality. Now to address the actual science behind squirt. And this is my understanding taken mostly from a study that was done, I believe, in France in the 1980s by a gynecologist, in which they had seven people with vaginas produce a urine sample and empty their bladder before beginning to sexually arouse themselves. And then they took ultrasound scan right before climax and right after climax. And what they found was that all the people who had emptied their bladders prior to sexual stimulation, right before climax, the bladder would refill itself. And then the scan right after climax showed that the bladder had emptied itself again. So the bladder produces urine, which is made up of creatinine, uric acid, and urea. People with penises have a prostate that produces something called PSA, or prostatic specific antigen, and it's the enzyme that helps with sperm motility. And people with vaginas also produce this enzyme from kind of the comparable organ to the prostate. It's something called the Skene's gland, and it sits near the bladder, but it drains directly into the urethra. And the Skene's gland produces a small amount of that PSA in people with vaginas as well. And milky, creamy cum is mostly that PSA enzyme with a little bit of diluted urine. Squirt still has some of that PSA in it, with a higher concentration of diluted urine. And that's what makes it more watery than ejaculate. So to simplify the answer to the question, is squirt really just pee? Basically, yes, squirt does contain some pee, just like cum also contains some pee. Cum will not be as messy, so a pro tip I like to share with those new to exploring, making themselves or their partner squirt, without any pressure, of course, is to put down a towel to soak up all that liquid, because it can get kind of messy, but that doesn't mean it's any less fun. For anyone who's interested in submitting any questions, I'd love to take a whole wide variety. If I don't have my own experiences, I love learning more, and I'll do the research to try and find an answer for you. So if anyone has any questions, I set up an email account for the show, and it is storieswithstellax@yahoo.com. All lowercase, storieswithstellax@yahoo.com. So I look forward to hearing more questions, and I look forward to talking to you all in the new year.
My baby. baby's a freak like me, and she knows just what I like. She carries all the keys to the places that no one dares to find. She won't tell nobody what goes on in these walls. If they talk, they probably tell you all about love. She knows just what I like. She carries all the keys to the places that no one gets to find. She won't tell nobody what goes on within these walls. If they talk, they probably tell you all.
To KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.